you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into another edition of the Next Pats Podcast. We have a phenomenal episode lined up for you today because it is Combine Week. So we are previewing the Combine, who will be the winners and losers, which players might turn themselves into potential Patriots fits. We have brought in one of the foremost Combine and draft experts in the country, The Athletic's Dane Brugler. He'll be chatting with us.
While we were out in Indy, there obviously is more than just the draft going on. There was some labor news, and we thought it would be a phenomenal idea, because it always is, to bring on our friend Judy Batista from the NFL Network. Nobody better when it comes to breaking these sorts of things down.
Okay, you know him, you love him, at DP Brugler on Twitter, Dane Brugler of The Athletic. If you've been following the draft closely for the last, decade and a half or so, Dane has been one of your go-tos. There is no question about it. Nobody knows these prospects better, follows them all year long, and helps us understand who we need to know about headed into the draft. Let's get him on the horn right now. Dane, thanks so much for being with us, man. It's always great to have you on.
Oh, hey, I appreciate that. It's hard to believe the Combine is here already, but it's such a big part of this process. And, you know, the not only the workouts, but the medicals and the interviews. And, you know, the Combine's also where a lot of the free agent deals get started being talked about. So it's just, there's a lot going on in Indianapolis as the NFL kind of convenes for this big conference.
I loved something that you tweeted the other day, because I think we lose sight of this year after year, that the Combine is important. But why is it most important? It's important because of the medicals and the interviews, the things you mentioned. And it, you know, the drills are somewhere there, but it might be a distant third, right? That's sort of your take on this.
Yeah, no question. And listen, the Combine was created back in the 80s because of the medicals. You know, instead of flying these guys all over the country to get different examinations by different teams, they just said, okay, let's be smart about this. Let's streamline the process. And so they had a central location, and they bring all these guys together, and they said, okay, we're all together. We might as well interview these guys. Well, we're all together, we might as well have them do on-field drills. And so the Combine really evolved from there, but it started with the medicals. And to this day, that's still the most important part of the process. And that's not to downplay the on-field drills and all the things that we can learn from not only the testing part of it, but just seeing these guys move out there and seeing them interact with the different players and meeting with the interviews, things like that. That's all important. But the medicals, getting updated information, that's information that will carry with them, you know, when they become free agents, you know, in 4 or 5 years, they're going to look at the Combine medicals and said, okay, well, you know, our guy, you know, he was flagged for a knee back then, you know, that's something we have to, you know, talk to him about and figure out what's going on with that. And so the medicals, first and foremost, the most important part of this process, and it could take players off of draft boards, or, you know, on the flip side, positive news could mean that they're going to be added to the draft board. And so for a player like Tua Tagovailoa, for example, we're going to hear a lot about that. What's going on with the hip? Is it healing correctly? You know, when will he be able to start throwing? He's not going to be a full workout in Indianapolis, but that's going to be one of those central topics that's talked about quite a bit.
We have to ask about the quarterback spot, because obviously the Patriots could be entering a new era after 20 years with Tom Brady here. And so I want to put it to you, because you know these prospects inside and out, and we're still sort of just dipping our toes into the water when it comes to what we like at the quarterback position from these guys that are available. And you mentioned Jordan Love. He's among a group that I think is considered potential, you know, first rounder. He probably will go in the first round just based on some of the traits that he has. But you're obviously looking at Joe Burrow being likely the top pick overall in the draft, and so he'll be out of reach for the Patriots. Then you have Tua and Justin Herbert, who sort of seem like they're in a tier together. Then maybe a little bit a ways down from them, you have Jordan Love and then Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm. If you were the Patriots and you had an opportunity to potentially make a Patrick Mahomes kind of trade that the Chiefs made a few years ago, and you package multiple first-round picks together, you add in a third, maybe a couple thirds, and you try to get into that top 10 range, would you do that for Tua or for Justin Herbert? Or would you be more apt to kind of sit tight in the middle of the draft there and try to get Jordan Love, or sit at 23 and be okay with taking Jacob Eason? If it were up to you, Dane, what do you feel like would be your best choice when it comes to those different scenarios? Because if you want one of the top guys, you're going to have to pay, obviously. But it seems like there could be some different players in the middle of that first round there where they could either sit at 23 or they could pay a little bit of a price and move up a handful of spots.
Yeah, and it's tough. I think that I would not trade up for Justin Herbert. That's just my personal opinion. I like Justin Herbert. I think there's something missing there. I see a Ryan Tannehill type of player, which, you know, I guess, I don't know, that means something different now than it did a year ago. So
that's true.
You know, I'm not even sure what that means anymore. But he's a guy that, he, you know, size checks the box, athleticism check the box. He's a smart guy. But when he's rattled, you know, he doesn't, it takes him a little bit to get going, and the mental processing's up and down. And, you know, the way I describe it is, you know, he's book smart, and that's great, but you need more quick minded players. And, you know, it's kind of, would you rather have the Jeopardy champion at quarterback or the 4.0 student? You want the Jeopardy champion because you want that quick recall and ability to think on your feet. And you don't always see that with Herbert. And so that worries me a little bit. And so that's why I give kind of the Ryan Tannehill comparison, which, again, might not be the worst thing anymore. But if I'm convinced that Tua is healthy, I would definitely consider that move to go up and get him if I was in striking distance to do it. Because Tua, from just in talking about instincts and how important it is at the quarterback position, I think he has that. I do worry about the durability. Part of what makes him special is his ability to improvise. You know, there's a little bit of Russell Wilson there with his ability to get outside the pocket and make things happen, but that also leads to more hits on his body. And so you do worry about long term. He needs to do a better job, you know, not taking some of those hits and being a more dependable player by being just a smarter player. And I think he can do that, and I would take the risk with Tua, but just depending on the asking price and how much that would cost certainly plays a factor. But if I decided that not to trade up and I'm staying put, there's definitely some interesting options there. I mean, Jordan Love, he's so intriguing. It's funny. If we switch his sophomore year and his junior year, so, you know, the year he had this past season happened as a sophomore, and then what he did as a sophomore happened this past year, Jordan Love's a top 10 lock. But it's because he took such a dip this past season with a new coaching staff, with losing a lot of talent around him, only one returning starter on offense. Because of all these factors, he didn't have that season that he did the year before. And so you have to figure out why. Is it because, you know, is he a product of the previous system? Is he, you know, what's going on there? And it's a tough decision. It's a tough process to figure out. And so I think Jordan Love should be in that conversation. Jake Fromm, even though he does not have the physical traits that you look for, this guy is so quick with his decision making. He's very accurate. It's an intangible position, and he has those elite intangibles, and I think that's going to carry him pretty far. Jacob Eason, he's a bigger Jay Cutler is kind of what he is. You know, he's a little slow footed, and that's the biggest worry I have is when the rush is coming down, bearing down on him. Can he do enough to get outside the pocket and create those second chance throws? I'm not sold that he can. And so you can poke holes in all these guys, but there's reason to be optimistic as well. And so I'm not. This is my way of dancing around your question because it's hard. I think if I had the chance to trade up for Tua, I would do it. If I couldn't draft one, if I couldn't trade up, or say I don't take one at 23, then maybe I'm considering moving up in the second round for a Jake Fromm. But besides that, there's a lot of intrigue, and that's where the combine hopefully helps you separate these guys, and it's kind of an elimination technique. Hopefully these guys either do something to help or hurt themselves, so you feel better about kind of whittling down your options.
It'll be fascinating to see how the Patriots handle it, whether or not they address it at all. But you touched on one element that I think will be a factor. Whenever they settle on that next guy, whoever it is, and they've had Jarrett Stidham in the system for a year now, and from mm-hmm. what we understand, they like him. But there's going to be a little bit more athleticism at the quarterback spot because that's just what's available now. Guys, in general, I would say, maybe outside of Jacob Eason, they all can move pretty well, and they can avoid that initial rush and be able to create plays with their legs, whether it's actually picking up yardage or just buying themselves time. And Tom Brady was great at that inside the pocket for a long time, but it feels like mm-hmm. you have this next generation of athlete at that position, which has just sort of changed it. And it's maybe even given these quarterbacks a little bit more margin for error in terms of, okay, you don't have to be historically accurate anymore from the pocket, because instead of 2.5 seconds behind center, now you have 3.5 or 4, and you have guys that are now in scramble drill situations all over the field, and it just makes it easier to hit those guys. Dane, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. You can find Dane Brugler on Twitter at DP Brugler. You can find all of his stuff, and it is phenomenal stuff, at The Athletic. Dane, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, anytime.
While we were out in Indy, there obviously is more than just the draft going on. There was some labor news, which I'm sure you have been keeping up on to some extent if you're listening to this podcast, but we did want to get into a little bit more detail because as this is the Next Pats podcast, this new labor deal, if it's ratified, will impact how rosters are built, how much time head coaches have to implement programs, how many teams make the postseason. All of these things will impact the Patriots. They obviously will impact the entire league. So let's talk to Judy Batista from the NFL Network quickly here in Indy before we take off, before we head our respective ways, so that she can detail to us why what happened this week with the CBA negotiations and the potential ratification of the new collective bargaining agreement is so important.
Here now with our friend Judy Batista, NFL Network. Judy, it's looking like you're going to be able to go home because we're here in Indianapolis, and we weren't sure how long the CBA negotiations would drag out, but it is Wednesday. That hurt my brain just to even try to recall what day it was. But Tuesday night, the players and owners got together, and the players decided by like a fairly split margin to send the CBA proposal to its 2,000-ish members, and they'll vote on it. And if they get a majority there, that thing will pass. So congratulations. You don't have to stay in Indianapolis for like another week as they drag this thing out.
Yay! Yeah, last night at one point somebody said, like, well, I guess it's possible that they keep talking tomorrow. And I was like, no, no.
It's so painful it would have been.
I'm like, no, no. But no, they sort of in the middle of the night, the union said, okay, they're going to give it to the rank and file and let them vote on it up or down. So they think that vote's going to happen probably by late next week, and then we'll have a resolution one way or the other. And if it is ratified, then they're good for 10 years, and we don't have to talk about this again for a while.
Thankfully for all of us, and our listeners included. But I do find it interesting, it feels like the owners were really motivated to get this done because, people listening to this and your viewers and our viewers, they remember, a lot of them, 2011, and that thing really coming down to the wire, and Robert Kraft being a big part of why it did come together when it did. But just for everyone's sake out there who's not tracking every little step of this, why the hurry? Because we are still a year away from when this current CBA would have expired.
Well, there's a few reasons that sort of are not solely football-based. The big one is that the media deals are expiring in a little bit, and they want to get started on renewing them because that's going to mean a ton of money because, as probably anybody who knows anything about football, is it's like the last guaranteed ratings winner, or like, you know, there's some sort of absurd stat, like 98 of the 100 top rated shows last year or something are NFL games. I mean, it's like ridiculous.
I think the other two were Quick Slants and Monday Night Patriots on NBC Sports Boston's Fun Fact.
Right, and the Academy Awards was like 101.
Right,
so,
right.
But so like it's, networks are, you know, desperate to hold on to that property, and so obviously they want to exploit that. But also there's other outside reasons, like the economy is pretty good right now, and so obviously you want to negotiate deals at the top of the economy, not risk that in a year we could be in a recession. And then the other part is, you know, they know that 4 years ago during a presidential election with a lot of interest that their ratings took a dip. It was a temporary dip, but it was a dip. And I think, you know, they're being realistic about it, and they anticipate that's probably going to happen again this fall. So you don't want to be negotiating when you're coming off a low ratings year. You want to negotiate off the top. So that's why.
Are owners afraid of Bernie Sanders?
I believe they are, probably for a number of reasons we shouldn't even get into at this point. I think.
But does that factor in?
Yes, I think it does. I think they're worried about any election outcome. Like a few weeks ago, I think they were worried. Like they were worried about Elizabeth Warren. I think they're worried about anything. One executive said to me, listen, no matter who wins the election, like we're overdue for a recession anyway by a lot. And so, you know, you don't want to risk, no matter who the president is, that, you know, 8 months from now, we're in a recession. And that's when they're trying to negotiate the media deal. So they want to finish the CBA and get right into negotiations.
Which makes total sense for the owners. And I think makes sense for the players too, because it makes sense for the owners.
Right, they get a percentage of that, a bigger percentage than they had in the last deal. So that's the argument from the owners, let's do this right now.
So has it been surprising to you then that the players have been as split as they have? And I totally understand, just probably in any negotiation, right, where one side is really motivated to get something done quickly and they're the ones sort of proposing the potentially finalized deal, you might be hesitant to say, oh yeah, let's just sign right off. But at the same time, because of the factors you mentioned, the players, I would think, have to look at this and say, there's a real chance, whether it's election related, ratings related, there's a real chance the deal for everyone isn't as good a year from now. And yet they've still been pretty split, it seems like.
Yeah, to me, what's been surprising is that the split has emerged so late in the process, because they've been negotiating this deal for 10 months. And I and other reporters have known that they were negotiating, for instance, based on the idea of a 17-game regular season since like last fall. I mean, that's not a new development. That's been in the deal since September or October. So I think what has surprised me is that the force of the resistance and the big names attached to the resistance has emerged so late in the game, right? I mean, I think we knew Richard Sherman, you know, had some concerns. We knew Russell Okung had some concerns. But, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers has been really a vocal pushback in those meetings now. And so, and, you know, now you're like J.J. Watt, you know, I'm a hard no. And Russell Wilson today tweeted, you know, no. So I think what we're surprised is that sort of the division has emerged so late. I mean, they're literally, you know, in football terms, they're like on the 1 yard line here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're that close.
It's funny. I actually had a chance to talk to Sherman late last night, and he was clearly not thrilled by how things had gone. And I think there's a section of the players who feel not only that it's not the best deal for them because of things like the 17th game and because of the percentage of the revenue split, which I'm sure they would like to be closer to 50-50, or even the length of the deal itself. 10 years is a long time. Who knows? Maybe this will look like a bad deal for the players in 10 years. But to me, and this was part of our conversation, and he tried to explain, you know, his side of it, which I get to a certain extent, but to me,
if you are negotiating on behalf of your union and there's 2,000 players and almost 70% of those guys are quote unquote rank and file or middle class or minimum salary right. guys, how could you make the argument that this isn't a good deal for them? It may not be great for Russell Wilson or for Richard Sherman or J.J. Watt. These guys have made, Aaron Rodgers, have made gobs and gobs of money. Right. And maybe that's not the sound business perspective, but it feels to me like now that this has gone to the members of the union at large, that it's probably going to pass because the majority of those guys like seeing more significant base salaries and more jobs.
Right.
Do you feel like this is because you just said it's on the 1 yard line? I mean, like, what kind of goal line stand are we expecting here? Is it going to be something that's going to get through, in your opinion?
I do. I think it will get through. I think that's been the expectation all along, that if it got to a vote of the rank and file, that it would pass. First of all, the struggle they're having with the union is the struggle that I think many unions have. Like, you are trying to balance the interests. And in this union in particular, where there is such a wide range of money involved, like, and you know, complicated locker room dynamics, right, which we know just on an everyday basis, like, that plays into it too. Like, you know, when a person as important as Aaron Rodgers is telling you this is a bad deal, well, like, is the first year guy on the roster, like, that's a little, right, daunting.
Totally.
Right, are you going against Aaron Rodgers? That's tough. And that's the struggle of union leadership, to sort of hold this very diverse coalition together. I do think it will pass for just that reason, because, you know, we all, as reporters especially, pay a lot of attention to the superstars in the league, but the vast majority of players are not at that level. The vast majority of players, to have an immediate increase in minimum salary of $100,000 a year, if you're a guy who thinks you're only going to spend 2 or 3 years in the NFL, getting an additional $100,000 immediately when this deal kicks in, whenever, if it gets ratified, is important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. It's, you know, $100,000 is pocket change to some guys.
Right.
But to a lot of guys on the roster, it's really important. And the point, the union went into these negotiations trying to correct what they thought were some of the flaws in the previous deal, where the middle class of players really got squeezed, right? They put in the rookie wage scale that was supposed to divert money to the veteran players. It did, but it went to the superstar level of players, right? And so what we saw every year at the start of free agency was that middle class of, like, veteran players get whacked, right? Guys get cut. It was
you
brutal.
Were having stars and guys on rookie contracts. That was like
it.
How teams
and
were constructed.
And the middle class of players just was destroyed. And so they went in, and the owners felt this way too, that they had to come up with mechanisms to help those guys, the sort of mid-career veteran guy, not the superstar level and not the journeyman, but the sort of mid-career guy. And they think they've done it here, but that's probably why the deal gets through, because that's really the guts of the league. You know, that's where the numbers are.
Right, and it's just sort of a little Patriots aside, but that's sort of been an interesting way that they have built their team.
The whole roster, right, historically, that's been the story of the Patriots, right? The whole Patriots dynasty is those guys.
The middle class. Right. And as teams have gotten younger, because the rookie labor is cheap. They've said, okay, if you want to have, you know, rosters that are averaging in the, you know, mid to low 20s, we're okay with being, on average, a 30-year-old team. They're the oldest team in the league, and right up there, their oldest team in the league last year, right up there the year before that. And it's not just because of Brady. Like, you could remove Brady from the equation, and you would still be one of the oldest teams. So sort of an interesting roster-building series of maneuvers there, I guess, by Bill Belichick. Do you think these social media pushes that you're talking about with, like, Russell Wilson and Jay, like, do you think that that could influence guys to the point where it doesn't get through? Or do these players have enough in terms of guidance from whether it's their agents or people around them that would just say, sorry, you got to say no to Russell?
I mean, Look, social media, even 10 years ago, I mean, Twitter existed 10 years ago, but it was not the factor it is now. I mean, you just did not see, like, these superstar guys on Twitter saying, like, this is terrible, vote this down, and, like, arguing with each other on Twitter. Russell Wilson said, you know, this is a no. And then Eric Winston, president of the union, immediately, you know, responded to him and said, you know, we're not rushing through anything, like, but read the deal, like, and then if you have questions, I'm ready to talk. Like, you just didn't see that before. That's like, you're seeing these divisions sort of laid bare. Like, it's like, yikes.
It's out there. It's entertaining. It's entertaining for us.
But imagine if you're the owners, and if this gets voted down, let's say, and you go into the final year, and then they still have to face trying to get a deal done before a lockout. You don't think the owners are going to pounce on the idea of a divided union? Like, how do you negotiate if you're divided? Like, they'd have to somehow get the coalition back together for a negotiation. That's tough. I'd be surprised if it gets voted down, because I do think the agents, if you're an agent who represents that sort of middle class kind of guy, you're telling these guys, like, take this deal.
And they're just like, there are more of those types of players out there than superstars. There are more of those types of agents who, you don't know about them out there. You know Drew Rosenhaus and the superstar guys, but there are plenty of those types of agents who would say, you have to take this deal. It's right for you. How significantly do you think this will change the sport? So part of, you know, obviously you have a 17th game.
Extra,
it sounds like,
team.
You have an extra playoff team. Mm-hmm. You have extra roster spots. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other changes that we might not know about as we're sort of like diving into what the league might look like after this?
Well, I'm sure what we're going to hear from coaches when they read it and realize there's even fewer padded practices and even more time off in the offseason.
Bill Belichick will love that.
I'm sure the coaches are going to like lose their minds, because I remember 10 years ago when they really started, you know, coming up with the work rules that were favorable to players, that like the coaches were like, what? You know? Well, this pares it down even more. So I'm sure the coaches are like, what? You know? Look, I think certainly the additional playoff team and extra wild card game is going to be big, because that obviously means more teams are going to be in the playoffs. That's going to save jobs. I mean, like, jobs are won and lost. Head coaches, did you make the playoffs? Well, it doesn't matter if you made the playoffs as the last wild card in. Just get into the playoffs. So that's important. I think that's probably going to keep more teams in the playoff race longer. I think there was some concern that if you had a 17-game season, aren't teams going to be out of it earlier? That'll be awful. Except if you expand the playoffs, that keeps teams in it longer. So I think that helps. Keeps the competitive level going.
Well, and one bye week, too, I think will help, make the end of the season more competitive, because that will be such an advantage that teams will be fighting tooth and nail.
Everybody wants to be a high seed, but only the top seed is going to get the bye. That is even more of an incentive to get that. That's an enormous advantage now. You know, they're going to expand the rosters. There's some rule in there about like an extra offensive lineman. You know, that there's little things like that that I think, you know, as we see how the deal unfolds. But to me, it's the having the 17th game and how they're going to manage that and what kind of impact that's going to have on players, and then having the extra wild card game. And are we going to see somebody come out of that last wild card spot? You don't see many wild cards make it, but you know, it's going to make it awfully interesting.
Totally. And I think there are some crazy numbers out there about just how beneficial that bye is. I think there are three teams in the last 10 years that have made the Super Bowl without the bye. So it's just...
And you're coming off a longer regular season. So you would think the bye is even heightened in importance, right? You're going to be more tired. You will have played 17 games. That bye is like, everybody needs that bye.
Totally. And I think you make a great point about saving jobs, and I think that might actually lead to a better league in general, because not that every coach who gets fired deserves to have his job in perpetuity, but something Belichick has talked about a lot is the fact that owners aren't giving their coaches enough time to really establish their programs. It takes multiple years, and Belichick said this about himself. I mean, he obviously benefited. They won a Super Bowl in his second year in New England. But he felt like his program hadn't really been established until 03 or 04. And he's, you know, 4 or 5 years in at that point. So I just feel like the quality of the game, even with the padded practices going away and practice time being a little bit down, like the quality of games could be better because
coaches could have that opportunity to make their teams what they want and move forward that way. Is that, I assume that's something the owners have to love, Judy, right? Because they also don't want to be paying coaches that they fired.
I mean, you would think, right? Even though they're all doing
they're
it.
They're all doing it. Like, it just, it seems ridiculous. Like such bad business for all these smart businessmen.
It's crazy. Look, I mean, the Giants have even done it, and they're like one of the last franchises you would think, but that's, they've found themselves in it. The Jets have done it. It's crazy, and I do think it'll save jobs because, look, the public perception is part of the problem. We're part of it, too. But, you know, if you're a coach that you're like, you've been in that job for 3 years and you haven't made the playoffs, well, I mean, now you got an extra chance to make the playoffs. That's going to save some jobs.
Awesome. Well, Judy, thank you so much for breaking this down for us, and congratulations again on being able to go. Now, it is snowing here in Indianapolis, so we shouldn't...
It's not clear if I'm actually going to go home when I'm expected to.
We shouldn't celebrate just yet. But thank you for hanging out and breaking this down for us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It all makes sense now. It all makes sense, doesn't it? Don't you feel a little bit better? Don't you feel like you have a better grasp on everything that's going on? We will, of course, keep you updated as to whether or not the new CBA does get ratified. But as Judy said there, it looks like we're headed in that direction. Could mean 10 years of labor, quote-unquote, peace for the owners and the players' union. If you're a football fan, you like that news. You do. Even with all the players tweeting, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, J.J. Watt, they don't want this deal. You want football because you're a football fan. You're a Patriots fan. You don't want to see the league get stopped for any sort of labor reasons here. So thank you so much to Judy for helping us out. Thank you to Dane Brugler. We appreciate their time. We appreciate your time. And make sure you carve out a little bit of time for us next week as well, because we are coming at you fast and furious with the Next Pats podcasts, and we will continue to hit you with those every single week. So keep an eye out, keep an ear out for the next. We continue to thank you for subscribing, commenting, rating, telling all of your friends and family about the Next Pats podcast. We're back. We're back. Let everyone know, anybody who is a Patriots fan, anybody who's a football fan, anybody who might be interested and how team building works, how the Patriots might look in 2020. Thanks again, guys. We'll talk to you soon.